The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Now, it's a little late in the season for this, but this is North Carolina, so we know that the season hardly ever ends for bug bites. 10 home remedies for bug bites that actually work. Feeling itchy and scratchy after being eaten alive by hungry insects? These chemical-free, all-natural remedies can help fast. Surefire ways to stop scratching. There are so many things to look forward to in the summer and the warm fall. Long days, backyard barbecues, and lots of sunshine. But one of the less desirable features that come along with the season is bug bites. These pesky, itchy, sometimes sore skin markings can vary depending on what bit you. But they're all awful in their own way. While you want to do your best to ward off these pests with mosquito repellents and bug zappers, bites can still happen despite your best efforts. But you don't have to just grin and bear it as you scratch your skin raw. In fact, you can easily stop the itch with some smart and easy home remedies for bug bites. The basic premise is that when an insect bites, it releases saliva into the epidermis, causing skin to have an inflammatory response with localized itching from the release of histamine and other biological chemicals, explains Monisha Banat, MD, a triple board certified physician who specializes in integrative medicine. Unless you're experiencing an allergic reaction, the best after-the-fact fixes will counteract that reaction, soothing skin and reducing inflammation and even preventing infection. Even better, the selections on the list are all natural, so you don't have to worry about slathering potential toxic chemicals on your skin. Stock up so you can have these on hand whenever you need them. Peppermint essential oil. This delectable essential oil doubles as a bug bite soother. The cooling sensation it provides to the skin counteracts the burning, stinging, and itching. Plus, peppermint is both anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial, so it may help reduce infection, says David Freeman, MD, a doctor of naturopathy and clinical nutritionist. Mouthful. Incidentally, peppermint can also prevent bug bites in the first place. Mosquitoes, fleas, flies, wasps, and spiders hate the smell of peppermint oil, says Dr. Freeman. Regardless of whether you're using peppermint oil as a home remedy for bug bites or as a preventive measure, Dr. Friedman advises against applying it directly to the skin because it may cause burning and stinging. Instead, he suggests mixing it with a carrier oil like jojoba or coconut. Use 5 drops of peppermint oil per ounce of carrier oil before applying it to your skin, he says. You can also make a diluted spray by filling a spray bottle with water. Mix 3 drops of essential oil with 4 drops of carrier oil per ounce of water. Lavender essential oil. If you've ever taken a big whiff of lavender, you know what instantly calming it can be. Well, it's equally calming on your inflamed, irritated, bug-bitten skin. Renowned for its ability to soothe inflammatory skin conditions, including minor burns, wounds, and acne, lavender essential oil, can help reduce itching and inflammation within minutes of application, says Melody St. Hours, our clinical herbalist and the author of The Simple Guide to Natural Health. She suggests using a brand that's made of 100% French lavender, grown at high altitudes like this formulation from Orchid and Temple. Apply 1 or 2 drops directly to the affected area and reapply as needed. Baking soda. This home remedy for bug bites is great for both adults and children since baking soda is so gentle. A true multitasker, baking soda just doesn't work its magic in your meals. It can also relieve irritation and itchiness. To make a paste, Toronto-based neuropathic doctor Olivia Rose, ND, recommends combining 1 tablespoon of baking soda with water. Add enough water to form a paste and apply to the bug bite, letting it dry before removing with a cool washcloth, she says. If you happen to be covered in bites, add 1 cup of baking soda to a neutral temperature bath. Echinacea liquid extract. This natural remedy has been a staple in people's medicine cabinets for centuries, for good reason. Echinacea is a liquid extract from the echinacea plant, which is part of the daisy family. It's been used for everything from treating colds and soothing sore throats to stopping infections in their tracks. If you notice that the area around your body is becoming red, hard, and swollen, apply echinacea tincture to the entire affected area every hour until the swelling is gone, says St. Hours. Apply the tincture liberally by patting it into your skin with your fingertips. Use at least 1/4 of a teaspoon per application. If the swelling does not decrease significantly after 24 hours of consistent use, or you start to run a fever at any time, she recommends calling your doctor immediately. Ice can be so soothing for a variety of things that ail you, bug bites included. St. Hours explains that this simple remedy works on itching, swelling, and overall discomfort for 2 reasons. First, your sensory nerves can only communicate a certain amount of information to your brain at one time. So when you apply the ice cube, the nerves that were telling your brain, "This is itchy," change their tune and start telling your brain, "This is cold," she says. Second, the coldness reduces local swelling and inflammation. Using a gel-filled ice pack, like this well-reviewed option by Rester's Choice, keep things messy and melty. That said, you may want to place a cloth between your pack and the skin for added comfort. You only want to apply it for a few minutes at a time, however. Plantain leaves. Even though it shares the same name with the starchy fruit similar to a banana, the plantain can help with bug bites. It's an entirely different plant, explains St. Sours. It's a common weed that grows well in packed soil, which means it's often easy to find at playgrounds, hiking trails, and even growing along the sidewalk in city. And there's no way I could pick that out of it. She says, you can recognize plantain species by the vertical veins that run along the leaves, which are organized like a circle of rays emanating from a central point. This plant has expressive wound-healing abilities, which is why it's an ingredient used in many healing salves and ointments. Dr. Friedman recommends making a paste using plantain leaves and bentonite clay or activated charcoal with water and placing it directly on the bug bite for immediate relief. If you don't have these other ingredients, you can also put a half a cup of dried plantain leaves in a blender or coffee grinder with enough distilled water to make a paste. You can also substitute apple cider vinegar in place of water and grind until it's a thick consistency, not too watery, before putting it directly on the skin. Vinegar. You may catch more flies with honey, but vinegar can also do the trick. Vinegar can reduce stinging or burning sensations and is a natural disinfectant, especially if you've been scratching a bite, says Bernard Boutonne, manager and associate certified entomologist at Triangle Pest Control. He recommends soaking a washcloth or absorbent paper towel in cold water and vinegar and applying it to the bite for a few minutes. If you've been a mosquito fish and you have multiple bites, dilute 2 cups of vinegar in a lukewarm bath and soak for 15 or 20 minutes, he adds. Oatmeal. You probably have this ingredient somewhere in your pantry, but you may never have thought to use it on your body. As it turns out, oatmeal provides healing, moisturizing, and antioxidant properties for the skin, making it one of the best home remedies for bug bites. Oatmeal can relieve itching and reduce swelling, which is exactly why you need it after getting bit or stung by something, says Amy Lawhorn, vice president for the pest control company, Mosquito Squad. Simply mix oatmeal with water to create a paste and apply it directly to the bite, she says. Let it sit for 10-15 minutes and then wipe it off. Aloe vera. Aloe is well known for soothing sunburns, but few people realize it can also ease the sting and itch of bug bites. When applied directly to the bite, the cooling action of the aloe vera gel will help shrink swelling and reduce the itch, says Dr. Rose. If you have a mature aloe vera plant at home, that's a bonus, but you can also purchase aloe vera gel, which works equally well and is an especially good idea if you have a pet parent, since aloe ranks among the houseplants that are toxic to dogs and cats. Toothpaste. Never thought of this one. To stop a mosquito bite from itching like crazy, simply apply a little toothpaste to it. When a mosquito bites you, it releases an anticoagulant that lets it feed without being detected, explains Boutonne. But your body's natural reaction to anticoagulant is to create histamines and send them to the bitten area, which is why you itch and the bite mark swells. He recommends applying a mini toothpaste to the bite so you can benefit from its soothing and cooling properties. Toothpaste is also naturally astringent, so it can prevent further swelling. Now that you're up to speed on all these natural home remedies for jug bites, you ought to be satisfied and able to prevent any kind of further pain and agony. If you've ever been around the theater or any kind of acting kind of situation, you've probably heard the phrase, break a leg. Well, where did that come from? When we say break a leg, we don't actually want people to break their legs. So why do we say this interesting phrase in the first place? Have you ever stopped to think about the common phrases we use in everyday conversation? People say things like knock on wood and spill the beans all the time, along with another common idiom, break a leg. Why exactly do we say it, though, and where did the phrase come from? Read on to get fascinating details from what it means in superstitious roots. Excuse me. Break a leg meaning. Break a leg is a phrase that means good luck. It's typically said to actors before they go on stage for a performance, particularly on opening night. But it's not limited to performers, though you can say this phrase to anyone. Here are some examples of how to use it in a sentence. I can't wait to see you perform tonight. Break a leg. I hear I have a big presentation at work tomorrow. Break a leg. Another idiom with an interesting meaning, dime a dozen. You have to go back centuries to understand what it means. The break a leg origin. The frame is believed to be rooted in a theater community which is known to be a bit superstitious. Performers believe saying good luck would actually bring bad luck on stage, so they tell one another to break a leg instead. That way the opposite would happen. Instead of breaking a leg, the performer would put on a flawless performance. It's believed to originate in the American theater scene in the early 20th centuries. Some believe it was adopted from the German saying Halsenbeinbruch, which means neck and leg break. That phrase may also be derived from the Hebrew blessing Hatzulaka Ulabraka, which means success and blessing. Saying good luck isn't the only superstition in theater. Other common superstitions include whistling in the theater brings bad luck. Saying Macbeth in the theater will curse the production. The last person in the theater leaving the ghost light in the middle of the stage on. Synonyms for breaking a leg. Common synonyms for this idiom include good luck, best of luck, Godspeed, all the best, blow them away. Now you know the interesting story behind this common idiom. If you need explaining it to someone else, break a leg. And don't forget to read up on the interesting reason why we say no reason, no worries, and we might find that another time. And speaking of luck, why is 7 considered a lucky number? The lucky number 7 is your favorite digit. Here's why you're not the only one. If you ask anyone to choose a number between 1 and 10, many times that person will choose the lucky number 7. But why? Is it something about being larger than 5, but just not quite being 10? Is it because 7, 8, 9? There are actually many reasons why the number 7 is considered a lucky number, similar to the four-leaf clover, and none of them have anything to do with the number's appetite. Spoiler alert, it's more mathematical than superstition, believe it or not. But if ghosts and demons are more your speed, you want to learn more about superstition. Continue to read up. Why is 7 a lucky number? There are 7 wonders of the world, the 7 dwarfs, 7 days in a week, 7 colors in a rainbow. There are 7 swans a-swimming, 7 notes on a musical scale, 7 deadly sins, the list goes on. Some mathematicians and scientists believe that there are specific properties of the number 7 that makes it appealing to people. Alex Bellows, a mathematician and writer for The Guardian, set out to find the world's favorite number in a massive public vote on this website, which received more than 44,000 votes from number files around the world. Voters gave many reasons for their choices. Often a number signified an important date, a memorable age, or simply excluded friendliness and warmth. Odd numbers outperformed evens, and round numbers ending in 5 or 0 proved too vague for most taste. When we say 100, we don't usually mean 100 exactly. We mean around 100, Bellows says. Why would you have something as your favorite that is so vague? In third place, number 8 was rewarded for its lovely symmetry and association with the Chinese character for prosperity. In second place, number 3 took the prize of its many appearances in culture and nature. As they say, everything is better in threes. And with nearly 10% of the total vote, the world's favorite number, according to Bellows' poll, is 7. Shocked? Probably not. It turns out that 7's triumph only reaffirms a human fascination that goes thousands of years. Bellows points out that the ancient Babylonian tablets were riddled with 7s, an observation future historians might make about us when reviewing footage of our Las Vegas slot machines and craps tables. The real reason people love 7 is the same reason we love James Dean, Prince, or the KFC Double Down Sandwich. 7 is a stone-cold rebel that follows no rules but of own. 7 is the only number among those we can count on our hands, 1 through 10, that cannot be divided or multiplied within the group, Bellows explains. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 can each be doubled to reach 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. 9 is divisible by 3. 7, then, is the only number between 2 and 10 that is neither a multiple nor a factor of the others. In this way, lucky number 7 stands alone, and we grasp this implicitly. It's unique. A loner, the outsider, and humans interpret this artificial property in cultural ways, says Bellows. By associating 7 with a group of things, you kind of make them special too. The point here is that we are always sensitive to arithmetical patterns, and this influences our behavior, even if we're not conscious of it. The other significance of numbers in other cultures. There is a strong connection between the number 7 and many religions around the globe. Lucky number 7 is even the basis for many myths and folklore. Ancient beliefs from around the world believed that the 7th son of the 7th son would be gifted with magical powers, both good and evil. In the Bible, scholars claim that God created the world in 6 days and used the 7th day to rest. Because of this, the number 7 is used to relate an idea of completeness throughout the Bible. In both Islam and Judaism, there are 7 heavens. Muslim people walk around the Kaaba 7 times while making the pilgrimage to Mecca. 7 represents harmony, encompassed by yin yang and the 5 elements in Confucianism. There are 7 higher worlds and 7 underworlds in Hinduism. In Buddhism, the newborn Buddha takes 7 steps. There you have it. If your favorite number is 7, you have a soft spot for rebels, the individuals, and the loose canons of math and cultures. And so does everyone else. A life well lived. Friends in high places. How a surprise adventure turned into the story of a lifetime for 2 Supreme Court justices and me. In the summer of 2001, my wife and I flew to Nice, France, to host Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The law school where I was dean, this is by David Yellen, where I was dean and had a summer program there, and Justice Ginsburg had agreed to give some lectures. I hadn't met her before. My wife, Leslie, and I were both pretty nervous. But the impeccable justice and her witty husband, Marty, were warmly conversational and easy to be with. One day we were standing in a hotel lobby when Justice Ginsburg said, "That looks like fun. Parasailers were flying above the sea. I'd like to try it." Leslie and I laughed nervously, but Marty knew his wife well enough to take her musing seriously. "You're crazy," he said. Though I had no real desire to parasail, I did feel an obligation to look after Justice Ginsburg. So when she said she intended to go, I offered to join her. The next morning we all marched down to the beach. With a little dark humor, Marty told his wife, "I'll remember you to our grandchildren." Leslie, thinking about the future of the country, said to me, "If only one of you can be saved, it better not be you." At the beach, the two of us were strapped into a tandem apparatus attached to a boat, and up we zoomed. I think we had without a jolt of fear as we took off, but we got comfortable pretty quickly. The view was spectacular, and the science very peaceful. When we started dropping toward the water, Justice Ginsburg seemed concerned, but I reassured that we only get down low enough to touch the warm Mediterranean with our feet, she relaxed. Minutes later, we were greeted on the ground by our relieved spouses. By the end of the week, after several dinners and concert, we really felt that Ruth and Marty had become our friends. I saw Justice Ginsburg from time to time over the years, and rarely was the parasailing story not mentioned. When I became dean in another law school, I would occasionally bring a group of alumni to be sworn into the Supreme Court bar. Justice Ginsburg would come to the reception held in one of the lovely public rooms at the court, and would usually tell our story. It was always fun to see the wide eyes of the alums as they heard it. At some point, maybe 8 years ago, I was contacted by Justice Ginsburg's official biographers who had heard about our parasailing and wanted to interview me. After we connected, I heard them do a media interview with her, and one of the writers told the story, using some of the very words I'd used. A couple of years later, a documentary filmmaker also contacted me for details. Though because no photos or videos of our parasailing existed, she couldn't use the resulting hit film, RBG. In 2015, someone sent me a clip of Justice Ginsburg and Antonio Scalia doing a live interview about their odd couple friendship. As vehemently as they disagreed about the Constitution and other legal issues, the two justices had grown deeply fond of each other. When they had served together on the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia Circuit, they bonded over their shared love of opera and travel, and their families regularly spent New Year's Eve together. This is interesting. Don't forget, Justice Ginsburg was Jewish, and Justice Scalia was a practicing Catholic. By this point, I also became friends with Justice Scalia. He, too, had come to Nice years before to teach in our program. I remember how the parasailing adventure had come up back then, and how he'd chuckle, saying there was no way he'd do something that crazy. But I could see that he took great pride in his friend's nerve. Now, watching the interview years later, I chuckled at the parasailing came up again. Nino, as Justice Scalia was called, talked about how adventuresome Justice Ginsburg was. Much to my surprise, he told the parasailing story as if it had been there. "Ruth, honest to goodness, went up behind a motorboat," he said on stage, with Justice Ginsburg to his right. "I mean, she's so light, you would think she would never come down. I would never do that," he continued. I remember thinking, "You weren't there, I was." He clearly wasn't lying or being self-aggrandizing. The story was about her, after all. Not long after, I saw Justice Ginsburg in Chicago and asked her whether she had caught Scalia's mistake. She somewhat sheepishly admitted she had and laughed. She appeared to have no problem with his enthusiastic confabulation. All is fair when friends exaggerate each other's more appealing traits, it seems, and Justice Ginsburg's impulse to sail over the water so appealed to her pal Nino that it was as if he'd been there. I happened to have dinner with Justice Scalia and his wife, Maureen, a few months after seeing the interview. I told him I had seen it and thought it was great. He said he enjoyed doing it. Then I took a gulp of wine and said, "You know that story you told about seeing Ruth parasailing?" "Yes," he said with a smile. "Well, you got that wrong. You weren't there when it happened, I said, and went over the timeline. He looked quite shocked and turned to Maureen. Were we ever in the south of France with the Ginsburg, he asked her. She thought for a moment and said no, they had never been there together. Very graciously and with good humor, Justice Scalia accepted that he had misremembered and unintentionally inserted himself into the story. We kidded about it, all of our members declining with age. But I never thought that aging alone explained it. I think it was a love and respect for Ruth Bader Ginsburg that took Nino Scalia to the Venice beach in Nice that day. Secrets of the Deep. Want to know how old a whale is? Check out its earwax, which builds up over time and hardens into a tubular plug. Take a cross-section of the plug and count the number of concentric rings. It's like a tree ring dating, just wetter. And the next is part of a contest they have going about best pet pals. And there's a half a dozen pictures here of miniature horses. One of them's walking with a little kid in the hospital. Another was next to a wolf, to a regular-sized horse. Boy, talk about a difference. Then one is actually has his head in a patient's lap. And there's an older gentleman, an African-American gentleman, which looks like a Vietnam veteran hat on, and he's petting a horse who's got his head in his thing. And I think it's probably the same horse. Then a horse running through the bunch of yellow flowers, and then a little boy feeding the horse. Little Horse Magic from High Springs, Florida. When our regroup of miniature horses enters a room, it's Magic, queen of the herd, who always seems to find the person who needs her most. The room on this day is a Florida-assisted living facility and is full of residents, staff, family, and even a local news photographer. Yet Magic wanders over and rests her head in the lap of one protesting resident, who begins talking to her. Isn't she beautiful, the resident says. The activities director begins to cry. It turns out the woman hadn't spoken a word since she arrived 3 years ago. That's the magic touch. Out a 14-year-old therapy miniature horse has nuzzled the hearts of many. She's been called to comfort survivors of tragedy and national disasters, as well as patients and residents at hospitals and assisted living facilities. Often our little black pony comes home with pink and red stains on her white nose from being kissed by all the ladies. Magic has a very special relationship with children in hospital care. One little girl who had both a heart transplant and leukemia said Magic made her first face hurt from smiling so much. A boy who was losing his sight held Magic close to his face, so he would always remember what she looked like. It's like she can see inside my soul, he told his mother. Magic also regularly comes to the rescue of the most trying circumstances. After visiting families affected by the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Magic and the rest of the horses were called back just a few days later to meet the grateful medical examiners. When the Sandy Hook school shootings happened in Connecticut, Magic got a call the same day and was in town just a week later. The librarian at the local library expected a light turnout to meet Magic given the circumstances, but 600 people showed up. It was the first time most of the kids had seen one another since the tragedy. To work indoors, all the miniature horses have to go through basic training. But Magic is a seasoned pro, riding elevators, taking stairs, maneuvering around hospital equipment, and staying calm around sirens and loud noises. She loves meeting new people and cheering everyone up. We often play the song, Do You Believe in Magic, before bringing her in. She knows exactly what that means. She perks up her ears and does a little prance for everyone. One assisted living facility, a woman who hadn't left her room in 6 months was waiting in the lobby bright and early on the morning Magic was scheduled to visit, holding a black and white photo of herself as a child sitting on a pony. One woman's family contacted the facility to alert them that she'd taken a turn for the worse. She just called and said there was a tiny horse in her room. They were relieved to learn she was having a spell all right, but not the hallucinatory kind, the magic kind. Nominated by Jorge and Debbie Garcia Benochia. The Healthy. Wellness from thehealthy.com. What is it like to be in a coma? The twilight zone between life and death is a mystery that doctors can solve. When T. Renee Garner was 32-week pregnant with her son, she was rushed to the hospital with extremely high blood pressure, her fetus in distress. Intravenous medication lowered her blood pressure, and her baby was delivered safely before taken to the neonatal intensive unit. But when Garner got to visit him the next day, she still wasn't well, and she began experiencing leg cramping so severe it left him weakening in the hospital. Then everything went black for 3 days. Doctors determined that Garner's coma was the result of a serial electrolyte imbalance. Her sodium had dropped precipitously, caused by the IV medication she had received. Garner says that while she was in the coma, she heard a siren and then the words, "It died," which she took to mean that she had died. It was actually a batter on a monitor that had died. She also recounts having horrible dreams. "I can't remember them, but I know they tormented me," she says. "Every dream I had during my coma was a nightmare." Zaida Kazay was 19 when she was riding in a car that was hit by a drunk driver. Her hemorrhage was so severe that she lost ability to walk, speak, and swallow, and she lapsed into a coma that lasted 10 days. When she started to fully awaken in the rehab hospital to which she had been transferred, she remembered none of it, not the accident nor the aftermath. The only thing she did remember was having her entire family gathered around her. But in fact, they were never there at the same time. What an individual patient will experience during a coma remains an unpredictable mystery to doctors. Even medical definition is vague. The Mayo Clinic calls it a state of prolonged unconsciousness that may be caused by a variety of problems. Technically, someone in a coma is unresponsive to light, sound, touch, and verbal communication, but that doesn't necessarily mean the patient isn't aware, says A. Javier Provencio, M.D., professor of neurology and director of Neurancy Neuroscience Intensive Care Unit at the University of Virginia. Dr. Provencio has had patients tell him they remember when doctors and nurses came into the room and pinched their big toe so hard it hurt, although they didn't respond at the time and were completely unconscious. The pinch is a way for doctors to see whether people in a coma will respond to pain or even wake up from it. Some remember nothing. Some remember a great deal of feelings, but nothing specific. Some people hallucinate that the people came to visit them who never actually did, Dr. Provencio says. On the other hand, there are people like Jennifer Beaver. On a Saturday night before Father's Day in 2017, she was riding in a golf cart with her husband and two friends. When she turned to talk to one of them, she slipped and fell off the moving cart, landing on her head. She suffered a massive brain bleed and was rushed to the nearby trauma hospital, whisked into emergency surgery, then put into a medically induced coma for a week to allow her brain to heal. The doctor told Beaver's husband that she was unlikely to survive, and if she did, she might be severely disabled. Yet when doctors gradually brought her out of the coma, Beaver not only was relatively healthy, but also recalled pieces of discussions he'd overheard. "I remember friends and family in the room, and one friend who flew in from L.A. to Nashville to see me," she says. "Later on, I texted the friend and asked her if she had been in the room, because I'm certain I heard her voice, although I can't recall seeing her. The friend had, in fact, been there." Even with brain imaging and other tests, doctors can never be certain whether a specific patient will emerge from a coma or how they will recover. But hearing the stories of patients who have come out of their comas and recovered helps doctors learn more about this strange phenomenon. One of the most important lessons, the human brain is a lot more resilient than they once thought. "For a long time, we were vastly underestimating the brain's potential for recovery," says Stephen A. Mayer, M.D., a specialist in neurocritical care and emergency neurology at Westchester Medical Center Health Network in Valhalla, New York. Many patients whose doctor thought had no hope of waking had come out of their comas after about 10 years of doing this. "I realized I knew less about prognosis than ever," he admits. Becoming clearer about the best treatments for coma patients and about how to better protect recovery's prospect are thriving areas of study. Dr. Provencio is one of the founders of Curing Coma Campaign, a group of neurocritical care specialists from all over the world who are developing coma strategies. The current Curing Coma Campaign website, curingcoma.org, provides information for patients, families, and healthcare providers. "We're really looking for people who have been affected by a coma to help us learn about their experiences before, during, and after," says Dr. Provencio. Email curingcoma@neurocriticalcare.org for more information. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. Track Intelligence, how to get the best car insurance. Insurance isn't the most exciting facet of car ownership, but it's one of the most important. Your policy is designed to protect you from financial calamity in the event of a car crash that may result in costly property damage and medical expenses. Plus, insurance is required by nearly all states. Company can use certain variables when calculating your monthly premium, including your driving record, your credit history, and the overall frequency of traffic-related incidents in the area where you live. So if you have racked up a lot of speeding tickets, have a low credit score, or live in a region with a high rate of crashes that lead to insurance claims, you can expect to pay higher premiums than someone without that baggage, regardless of your history. CR has strategies you can use as you shop for the best coverage at the lowest risk. Premiums. In addition to your driving record, insurance premiums can depend on miles driven each year, your car's value, and a variety of personal circumstances, such as education, occupation, says Bob Hunter, Director of Insurance for Consumer Federation of America. What to do? Ask your agent if it matters who in your household drives certain vehicles. It might help save on your premiums if the family member with the longest commute drives the least valuable car. Even so, Jack Gillis, CFA's executive director, cautions that teens and other less experienced drivers should be paired with the vehicles they are most comfortable driving. Ways to save. CRS found that some insurers increase premiums because they know consumers won't bother switching companies. That practice has been banned in nearly half of states. Collisions and speeding tickets can prompt insurers to raise rates, but they also might be counting on your complacency. What to do? Always drive safely and shop around periodically for better deals. Raising your out-of-pocket deductible can also reduce rates. Hunter says increasing to $1,000 for $500 can cut premiums an average of 11%. Be sure to consult your latest insurance company ratings at cr.org/car insurance. Nearly all states set minimum limits for liability auto insurance, which covers injuries and property damage when in a crash, but those minimums might not be enough for your situation. What to do? Experts recommend greater coverage if you have assets, a home, or other investments that could be a risk in a lawsuit. Hunter advises auto liability coverage of $300,000 for bodily injuries and the same for property damage. Homeowners, especially those with significant wealth, should consider an umbrella policy for broader coverage above and beyond their auto and home insurance policy limits. Note, state minimums are always better than no coverage. What to skip? Collision and comprehensive insurance are a must with any new car, but you can forego it with an older model as its value declines. That's because you might end up paying more in premiums each year than you would ever to recover if the car were totaled. What to do? The CFA advises canceling collision and comprehensive insurance when your annual premium for it exceeds 10% of your car's value. Consult the call value estimator at cr.org/trade-in to see what your vehicle is worth. You can also skip the added premium cost of rental reimbursement coverage if you have a second car you can use. Choose a healthier snack bar. Breakfast, post-workout snack, afternoon pick-me-up. When you need something quick and portable, a snack bar is an easy solution. But before you grab just any bar to fuel up, take a local look at the label. It could be a sugar bomb. To help you choose wisely, CR nutritionist Amy Keating, RD, that's registered dietitian, shares two things to look for on that snack bar wrapper. Which ingredients come first? The ingredients and list can tell you a lot about a bar's nutritional content. Choose a bar that contains mostly real foods, such as fruits, nuts, oats, or eggs. It's even better when those ingredients are near the top of the list. For example, the RX bar at Wright, which there's a picture of it here, lists dates first, and look for a bar without about 3 to 5 grams of protein and fiber. Bars that have much more than that tend to have highly processed ingredients, such as chicory root fiber or soy protein isolate. Is there a lot of added sugar? Ideally, you want a bar with zero added sugars. Those sugars, such as syrups, are added during processing. But up to 6 grams is reasonable. Some snack bars contain as much as a typical candy bar. For instance, Hershey's milk chocolate bar has 21 grams of added sugar, the same amount as the Clif bar below. Here's how the three snack bars compare. The RX chocolate sea salt, 220 for a 1/8-ounce bar, 210 calories, 2 grams of saturated fat, 0 grams of sugar, 5 grams of fiber, 12 grams of protein, 260 milligrams of silver. CR's take. This RX bar is mostly made with real whole foods. The only processed ingredient is natural flavors. There's plenty of protein from natural sources, egg whites and nuts. Kind, dark chocolate and nuts and sea salt, $1.20 for a 1.4 ounce bar, 170 calories, 3 grams of saturated fat, 4 grams of sugar, 7 grams of fiber, 5 grams of protein, and 140 grams of sodium. CR's take. This kind bar is pretty good fuel, but loses points because it has chicory root fiber and palm kernel oil, which is high in saturated fat. Still, nuts and a low amount of added sugars redeem it. Clif bar, sweet and salty chocolate chunk with sea salt, $1.45 for a 2.5-ounce bar, 250 calories, saturated fat on 1.5 grams, added sugars 21 grams, fiber 4 grams, protein 9 grams, and sodium 300 milligrams. KR's take. Brown rice syrup, a type of added sugar, is the very first ingredient. Though it has rolled oats and soybeans, the Clif bar also has oat fiber, soy protein isolate, which are processed. Recalls. Kid smoke alarms. It's kind of important. Kid is recalling about 226,000 true chance smoke alarms and combination smoke carbon monoxide alarms because the alarm can fail to alert owners to a fire. The alarms are sold at Walmart, Home Depot, Menards, and other departments and hardware stores, electrical distributors nationwide, and online at Amazon. shopkid.com and other majors from May 19th through September 2020 for $10 to $70. What to do? Contact Kitty at 844-796-9972 or go to kid.com, that's K-I-D-D-E.com, for details and to get a free replacement alarm. The company instructs the owners to keep using the recalled alarm until you install a replacement. Klein Tools Voltage Testers. Klein Tools is recalling about 1.5 million models NCVT non-contact voltage testers, which automatically detect and indicate voltage in outlets, circuit breakers, lighting fixtures, and more, because the on-off button can remain depressed during the power-on or power-off cycle, causing the tester to work improperly. If you're testing electrical sources, you may not be warned of the presence of a live voltage if the tool is not properly operating, posing a serious shock hazard. The tester tools will sell in Home Depot stores and industrial distributors, electrical wholesalers, and some hardware stores nationwide from January 2020 through March 2021 for about $17 when sold separately and about $40 to $68 when sold in a kit. Obviously, you stop using the voltage tester and contact Klein Tools at 800-527-3099 or go to kleintools.com for details and instructions to get a free replacement tool. IKEA dishware. IKEA is recalling about 150,000 bowls, plates, and mugs because they come brittle and break, causing hot food or liquid to leak out and posing a burn hazard. The dishware was sold at IKEA stores and website from August 1919 through May 2021 for $4 to $12. What to do? Stop using the dishware and return it to any IKEA store for a real full refund. Call IKEA at 888-966-4532 or go to IKEA/USA.com for details. Fisher-Price smoothers, soothers, and gliders. Fisher-Price is recalling about 120,000 4-in-1 rock and glide soothers and 55,000 2-in-1 soothe-and-play gliders following reports of 4 infant deaths in the 4-in-1 rock and glide soother. The Consumer Product Safety Commission cautions that inclined products such as gliders, soothers, and rockers and swings are not safe for infant sleep due to the risk of suffocation. The products were sold at juvenile product stores and on mass merchandise and online, including Walmart and Target stores and Amazon. The 4-in-1 Rock and Glide soothers were sold from January 2014 to December 2020 for about $108. The 2-in-1 Soothe and Play gliders were sold from November 2018 through May 2021 for about $125. Immediately stop using the product. Contact Fisher-Price at 855-853-6224 for details and a refund, or go to the service Mattel.com. I'm sorry, that's service.mattel.com and click on Retail and Safety Alerts. Grammar Tea Kettles, that's G-R-A-M-R. Grammar is recalling about 92,000 brush gold tea kettles because the kettles can expel hot water and excessive steam during use, posing a burn hazard. The kettles were sold online at causebox.com in 2021 Winter Box Seasonal Assortment from November 2020 through April 2021 for $50 to $55. The kettles were also sold separately online at roseandfitzgerald.com from December 20 through February 2021 for about $100. What to do? Stop using the kettle and contact Grammar at 866-512-2152 or go to causebox.com for details and a credit refund. Target Shower Stools. Target is recalling about 58,500 Room Essential Stour Tools because the stool can become unstable or slippery while in use, causing it to tip over and posing a fall hazard. These tools were sold at Target stores and online from March 2019 through December 2020 for about $35. Stop using the stool, return it to any Target store, or call Target at 800-440-0680 or go to Target.com for a refund. Camelback water bottles. Camelback is recalling about 46,000 Podium and Peak Fitness water bottles because a small silicone valve in the cap sold with the bottle can come loose and detach, poses a choking hazard. The bottles were sold at Sporting Good Cars and on Camelback.com from February 2019 through January 2021 for $10 to $25. What to do? Stop using the cap sold with the water bottle and contact Camelback at 800-767-8725. Or go to Camelback.com for details to get a free replacement cap. Cove Appliance Dishwashers. Cove Appliance is recalling about 42,000 24-inch built-in dishwashers because the heating element can fail to properly shut off and can overheat, posing a fire hazard. The dishwashers are sold in home appliance stores from February 2018 through May 2021 for $2,400 to $2,500. what to do. Stop using the dishwasher, unplug it, and call Cove Appliance at 888-651-9376 or go to coveappliance.com for details and to schedule a free repair. Product update. Green washers that save you money. The best models in our test deliver super clean laundry and lower water bills and electric bills, too. How eco-friendly front-loading washers work. The first machine tumbles the dry load a bit to sense its size. Then the tub fills to a preset level and the washer adds water as needed to maintain that level. Our testing shows that most load requires only about a quarter cup of detergent. During the wash cycle, the motor spins the drum clockwise, then counterclockwise. The action is generally enclosed in the agitation of a top loader. High spin speed cycles, 1,000 to 1,400 RPMs, remove rinse water from the clean laundry, cutting down on dryer time and the energy it requires. If you're in the market for a new washing machine, you certainly want a model that does a great job getting your clothes clean at a price that fits your budget. It's also a smart idea to look for one that will save on water and energy costs. The models in our rating do it all, combining a top-notch washing performance with efficient operation across all price ranges. All of them have Consumer Reports' new Green Choice designation, marked in our ratings with a green leaf icon, which helps you easily identify the most eco-friendly options when you shop. The best cost savers. The least efficient washing machines can use up to 45 gallons of water per load. The typical household launders about 300 loads a year, according to Energy Star, the government program that helps consumers identify energy-efficient products. That's nearly enough water to fill a 12-by-24-foot swimming pool at an average depth of 6 feet. Over a 30-year period, using more energy and water-efficient washers could save consumers up to $30 billion, according to the Appliance Standards Awareness Project, citing information from the Department of Energy. Though there is good reasons to consider the environmental impact of washing a load of laundry, not the least of which is how it will affect your water and energy bills. As you consider the washers in our rating, you'll see that the CR's top performer models have CR's recommended mark, or if they combine top-notch performance and relatively low price, they carry CR's best buy symbol. Now you can also find the most eco-friendly choices by looking for the leaf symbol that indicates a model is a green choice. The designation focuses solely on the factors that impact the environment, says Jim Natty, a CR associate director and appliance testing team leader. These aspects are water efficiency, energy efficiency, reliability, and how gentle the machine is on fabric. Almost half of Americans, 47%, say they'd be willing to pay more money for products that are green, eco-friendly, or safe for the environment, according to an April 2021 Consumer Reports nationally represented survey of 2,288 adults in the U.S. But in this case, you don't have to. Our current Green Choice washing machine starts at $800, far less than some of the highest-priced models in our overall washing machine ratings. And you won't be sacrificing clean clothes either. Our tests show that Green Choice washers not only reduce one's environmental footprint, they also tend to be excellent at cleaning clothes, says James Dickerson, Ph.D., Chief Scientific Officer. That's one of the big reasons why a majority of the Green Choice washers are also recommended by CR. CR first launched Green Choice for automobiles in February, assigning a green leaf logo to new cars, SUVs, and minivans with the lower greenhouse gas and smoggy-forming emissions. Every consumer should be able to buy products that help save money and reduce environmental footprint, says David Friedman, CR's Vice President of Advocacy. If we're going to do something about the huge cost that climate change and air pollution create for consumers, it can't just be the consumer's responsibility. Everyone needs to share in it, and that's exactly what Green Choice is about. Better information for consumers, and an opportunity to encourage manufacturers to do better with their next products. How does a washer earn CR's Green Choice designation? To become a Green Choice washer, it might earn top scores in four key areas. Water efficiency. We measure a water washer's total water consumption, hot and cold, per pound of laundry. The most water-efficient washers in our ratings average 10 gallons, 75% less than the older models. Energy efficiency. We calculated how much electricity it takes to run a washer, heat its water, and dry clothes post-wash. Models that extract more water from clothes allow a dryer to use less energy during the tumble-dry cycle, which earns the washer the higher score. Brand reliability. This rating, based on data from our latest member surveys in which 111,500 CR members shared their experiences with 127,350 washers, estimates the likelihood that a brand and type of washer will break or experience problems within the first 5 years of ownership. Reliable washing machines are less likely to require repairs. Gentleness. We measure how rough a machine is on washed fabric. Gentle washers are easy on clothes, extending their lifespan, helping to reduce global clothing consumption and carbon emissions. 10 ways to cut your laundry cost. Doing laundry isn't cheap. Electricity alone, Americans used 11 billion kilowatt hours washing laundry in cold water last year and 63 billion kilowatt hours drying it. That's about 1,463,000,000 and $8,379,000,000 dollars respectively. Around 5% of a home's electricity, 5 to 10% of a home's electricity use goes to washing and drying clothes, says Noah Horowitz, senior scientist at the National Resource Defense Council, and not counting water use or the energy we spend on the job. Green Choice washing machines save you money. They're better for environment, and the green leaf icon distinguishes the most eco-friendly models from the rest of CR's ratings. These models typically have faster spin cycles, which extracts more water from clothes, cutting down on costly dryer time, and the most efficient dryers have advanced moisture sensors that cut their energy use by 20% compared with dryers that use thermostat heating elements. About half the electric dryers in our rating are Energy Star certified. Here are more tips from CR's expert at Energy Star. They won't affect cleaning performance if they help save energy and water. Wash a full load. It might seem like a no-brainer, but let's start here. Wait to run a full load rather than washing several smaller loads. One large load using 13 gallons of water is more efficient than two small loads using 10 gallons of water each. Don't use too much detergent. You only need a quarter cup of detergent for an average load. According to our lab test, overdosing on detergent is a bad move for your budget and the environment because it means extra detergent is being dispersed into the local water systems. It can lead to unwatered buildup and odors in your machine as well. Number 3. Opt for cold water when you can. Our test revealed that today's enzyme-based laundry detergents remove dirt and stains effectively without the aid of hot water. Brighten whites with cold water and bleach alternatives such as OxyClean. But you'll need hot water for tackling oily stains, cleaning dirty diapers, and washing sheets and towels of someone who has been sick. Regardless of your washer type, setting your water heater to 120 degrees rather than 140 saves energy when doing laundry with warm or hot water. 4. Choose the highest speed based on the load. This extracts more water from your laundry, cutting dryer time. If you tried this and found that clothes come out wrinkled after drying, remove the laundry from the washer, untangle, and shake out before you toss it into the dryer. But be cautious with delicate items, which don't retain as much moisture and may become damaged while spinning at higher speeds. Number 5. Avoid the sanitary cycle except when truly necessary. Available on certain models, this relies on internal heater to boost the water's temperature and increases energy use significantly. It can be useful when washing the clothes and linens from someone who's sick or recovered from COVID-19. In the dryer, clean the lint screen and dryer duct every time. Cleaning the lint screen before every load will improve air circulation and prevent fires. And if you use dryer sheets, know that they can leave a film on the filter that reduces airflow. So once a month, scrub the lint screen gently with a brush and soapy water. Rinse it well and allow it to dry fully before reinserting. Also, at least once a year, use a brush or vacuum to keep the duct clean and promote airflow. Dry similar items together. Don't mix heavy and lightweight fabrics. Dry and wash towels and sheets with sheets. Clean the moisture sensors. The residue that dryer sheets can leave on sensors can build up and trick the machine into thinking the laundry is dry even when it's still damp. Check your owner's manual for how to clean your model's sensors. Use the automatic cycle instead of time drying. For most dryers, the auto cycle relies on one or more moisture sensors to determine when laundry is dry to avoid overdrying. Otherwise, if running a load for, say, 45 minutes, the machine might waste energy, continuing to heat already dry clothes for several more minutes. Try air or line drying, just like the old days. Shake items before hanging them to lessen wrinkles. Turn brighter dyke items inside out to reduce fading. Always lay sweaters and stretching knits flat to avoid stretching them or puckering the shoulders. We got a whole list of front loaders that all are green designated and all are very high ranking. And the first nine are LGs. So any LG washer, front loading washer looks good. Kenmore kicks in there about number 9, and LG gets 2 more, then Electrolux, then Sansum, then Electrolux again. And the compact models are the Mile, Samsung, Mile, Samsung, Bosch, and LG compacts. I'm not going to run through all the details on these, but those are all the different types. Upgrade your kitchen for less. During the years plus pandemic lemon, you probably spent more time in your kitchen than ever. and perhaps you're itching to make a change. Maybe it's the tired color scheme, or the cluttered countertops and drawers, or maybe the way the oven temperature always seems to be a few degrees off. But how do you decide what really needs to be replaced, and what just needs a good refresh? And with costs for everything from lumber to appliances in a flux, what's the best way to upgrade at a price you can afford? According to Remodeling 2021 Cost versus Value Report, a full-scale gut for a 200-square-foot kitchen with middle-of-the-road materials cost around $75,000, up almost 10% from 2020, probably thanks to COVID-induced labor shortage and potentially temporary price hikes for many building materials. But you don't have to spend anywhere near that much to get a kitchen you love, said the remodeling pros and interior designers we spoke to, as well as CR's own home experts. The trick is to focus your remodeling dollars where they're needed the most. Here's how to figure out whether you should go for an update or a replacement for key areas in your kitchen, and smart strategy for achieving the changes you want on your budget. You'll see price estimates throughout, but know that numbers will vary based on the material you use, the size of your space, the cost of labor if you hire a pro. Cabinets. Any change you make to your cabinets can have a big impact on the style and function of your kitchen, because they take up so much real estate. If your cabinets are in good shape, the boxes are solid, the doors are intact, and the drawers slide smoothly, refinish the exterior will transform their look. If your cabinets have been falling apart and you want totally new door style or layout, consider replacing them. This is far more extensive option, but there are some smart ways to save. Fixing up what you have. Who's involved? What's involved? Changing the color of your cabinets with paint is a do-it-yourself friendly but time-consuming, because you will need to remove the drawers and drawers, sand the surfaces, and apply two coats of paint. Go for a semi-gloss finish paint, says Rico DePaz, who runs the CR Paint Test Lab. The high shine makes the cabinets look new and gives them a stain-resistant, ripable finish. You can also have existing cabinets refurbished by a pro, who replace old doors and drawers with new ones and cover the fronts and sides of the cabinet boxes with a matching finish, such as a wood veneer or laminate. New door and drawer hardware are super easy style upgrades. Just be sure new handles are the same size as the original, so you won't have to drill new screw holes and fill old ones. Cost. According to Home Advisor, an online services company, $100 to $300 for materials to paint a 150-foot square space, $4 to $10 per square foot to hire a pro to refinish cabinets, around $91 to $450 per linear foot to replace cabinets, and $2 to $50 per piece for new hardware. Want something new? What's involved? Buying stock or semi-custom cabinets is far less expensive than having custom cabinets built. A contractor or a cabinet installer will measure your space, order the cabinets from a kitchen showroom or home center, then handle the installation. Home centers and IKEA also offer design and installation services. Or try a budget-savvy designer trick. Buy just the cabinet boxes from IKEA and add semi-custom doors, drawers, trim, or hardware. One company that provides this service is Semi-Handmade. Other ways to save. Removing the old cabinets yourself could save you around $500 on demolition. If they're in decent shape, you could also donate them to an organization such as Habitat for Humanity's Restore, or give them away on a site like FreeCycle. When choosing new cabinets, stick with a streamlined design instead of an ornate one. These typically cost less. They're also easier to clean. We've been specifying more shaker-style cabinets for this reason, says Ariana Lovato, a kitchen designer with the National Kitchen and Bath Association, who is based on the central coast of California. Also consider buying secondhand cabinets from a local salvage shop, Habit for Your Manager's Restore, or Renovation Angel, which salvages entire luxury kitchens, then sells and ships them around the country. Purchased this way, custom cabinets that originally cost $50,000 might be available for under $5,000. Even with the cost of shipping and installation, you could save up to 90%, depending on the style and condition of the cabinets. Cost. According to Home Advisor, $100 to $200 per linear foot for stock cabinets, or $75 to $400 for semi-custom. Installation costs are 1 to 3 times the materials. Semi-Handmade estimates $2,450 to $4,475 above the IKEA boxes. Lighting. Changing the bulbs and adding a dimmer can make a surprising difference. If you want to replace or add a fixture, you may need an electrician's help. Fixing up what you have. What's involved? For starters, make the switch to Energy Saw certified LEDs. Even though an LED bulb may cost more up front, you could save $55 on electricity over its life compared with a standard incandescent. And considering adding a dimmer switch, which lets you adjust the intensity of light based on your needs, says Joe Rebaru, a lighting designer in Lexington, Kentucky. cost $1 to $3 per LED bulb and $10 up for dimmer switches at Home Depot, plus $100 to $200 for installation, according to Home Advisor. Want something new? What's involved? Plug-in underCambit light fixtures are an easy way to cast task lighting on your counters. Good choices are linear and strip lights, which brighten the surface evenly. Adding decorative fixture can make a bold visual impact. If you choose a style with glass shades, go for opaque or patterned glass, says Laura Gross, president of Gross Electric, a lighting showroom and electric distributor in Ohio and Michigan. They prevent glare and hide grime better. Cost, about $5,200 for under-cabinet lighting, $50 and up for pendants at Home Depot. That costs less at salvage or vintage stores. Installation costs $95 to $250 per Home Advisor. Squeeze more out of your storage face. Rolling kitchen cart. Built-in island can cost thousands. A cart can provide similar storage for a few hundred dollars. Some have fold-down tabletops and hideaway stools, says Caroline Harbin, Lowe's Trend Strategy Manager. Cabinet organizers. These retrofit solutions make help use of every square inch of your cabinet, says Amy Tokos, organizer based in Omaha, Nebraska, and president of the National Association of Productivity and Organizer Professionals. Her favorites include lazy Susans for blind quarter cabinets, roll-out drawers for base cabinets, and tiered shelves for pantries. Toe-kick drawer. These push-to-open drawers use the space at the bottom of the base cabinets. It's a hidden but useful place to store school supplies, says Bailey Carson, home expert Angie. They can cost $250 and up, depending on whether you need professional installation. We have more of these, but we're about to run out of time, so let's go ahead and close out with some laugh lines. Why do football players only dance when the good stuff happens? Just once, I want to see a quarterback throw an interception and do sad interpretive dance. I remember being at a girls' high school volleyball game as a little kid and thinking, these are some of the most powerful babysitters in the world. You should be able to play defense at bowling. I ran a half marathon. Sounds much better than I quit halfway through a marathon. If I throw my best son a baseball, he drops it in a football, he fumbles. But if I toss him a cell phone, my man has sick, one-handed no-look. The part of the baseball game I most identify was the umpire neurotically dusting home plate after players mess it up. All in a day's work. While out walking with my son, a doctor and I fell and cut my hand. Quickly realizing the injury would require sutures, he voice texted his nurse. My mom has a bad cut. I'm on the way office to sew her up. His smartphone transcribed the last part of his message. I'm on the way to the office to sew her up. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please don't hesitate to call us at 919-832-5138. It's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.